Real in An Hour From Now takes us back to the 18th century and tells the story of a young aristocrat who's facing a life without music, a prospect he finds unbearable. Coram Boy is at 9. And that's after the Archive Hour. This week, Professor Sean Street explores the undiscovered oral history to be found in home recorded voices.
Now sit back and listen to this.
We got a grinding tape, we got records and stuff like that.
This is a magnetic tape recording.
This is a programme about words and sound. Not unusual for an edition of the Archive Hour, you might think, except that in this programme you are especially privileged, because these are words and sounds that were never meant for you to hear.
Daddy is naughty. He never cooks anything. He only cooks toast for me.
Material captured domestically as the technology of non-commercial recording became available.
Stand by, stand by, stand by, Father. Switch this thing over now onto the fast playing speed, 7.5 inches per second.
People hearing their voices for the first time, sending audio letters to loved ones, inventing their very own type of radio with varying degrees of success and quality. A tradition surprisingly over a century old.
A bit louder now. Four track.
Welcome to the strange world of home recorded voices.
Hello, John. How you going on, son?
Weather, what do rather have? Or rather, what do weather have?
I'm on a journey of discovery, searching for these hidden oral histories, much of them on old reel-to-reel tapes, discs, and even cylinders, material that in some cases has lain forgotten in boxes housed in attics and cellars across Britain.
My name's Oscar. I was an egg.
Not all forgotten, that is. Because I do at least know where to start this journey. Richard Harrison, a lecturer in film studies at Norwich College, has been collecting these unique social records for many years.
Having our relatives from England, Rosemary, Andy, and Winnie. Welcome to Arizona. Going to have a weather report for you in a minute, just for fun.
We're still waiting for the new temperature, but the one an hour ago was 100 degrees.
I hear somebody call Rosie.
Yes, John. Yes. Nice to meet you.
Well, Richard's bringing in an enormous cardboard box here. Let's see what we've got here, Richard.
Right.
Full to the brim.
Goodness me.
With every kind of tape you can imagine, 5-inch, 7-inch, some of them domestic, some of them Jimmy Shand's band, so a commercial reel-to-reel tape there. And these little tiny Scotch magnetic tape boxes, no more than a couple of inches across, quite familiar because I think a lot of those sort of tapes were the sort of things that people would post to one another as audio letters. What's this one you've got here?
Ah, this one here. It says to Jack and Iris from Young Wives Fellowship and Men's Fellowship, April 28th. 1961, Lansdowne. That's it.
And we are thankful that we are sending forth from the Men's Fellowship, from the Young Wives Fellowship, two of our own number to serve as missionaries. We shall look forward greatly to the time when you will be able to send back a tape to us.
Can we all stick on
here?
Goodbye!
How do you go about finding this material? Have you got a strategy for locating the stuff?
I think I must have a sixth sense in locating it. I find it on the internet, but also public auctions and car boot sales is another way, because they're generally technology that people now can't play. They say the machine's bust or they've got rid of the machine, they've just left with the tapes, so therefore they sell the tapes off, often to me. So it's great. You just never know what you're going to find on a day-to-day basis, which keeps me going, really. It's tremendous.
We've heard an example of some of your collection already, and it may actually be that as a result of this programme, people identify voices from their own past. Who knows? That would be really quite exciting. But have you been able to identify people with whose material this belonged to originally in any cases?
As yet, no, which is really unfortunate. I've tried to chase some people, but the trail really ends. It gets to a period where it just grinds to a halt.
Hello, Arthur. I think this is the 16th. And it's been marvellous news to hear you're so much better. We've naturally been jolly worried about you, and you've had a rough time, and we're terribly sorry. But now we hope this continues. And then we'll have to think of other things, you know, getting you over and so on. But that will have to wait upon how you are, won't it?
In some cases, we do know a name, but we know very little else. I mean, we have the name Lorna Butler.
Mm.
Tell us about Lorna Butler.
Lorna Butler, fascinating. She was the person who recorded really the archive that got me going in all of this in the first place. And Lorna came from Reading, and the collection was very well labelled and dated in the 60s. As well as recording programmes off the radio, she also recorded her own voice. And that particularly attracted me, and that was one of those things that made me want to hear more, really. Kind of set the whole wheels in motion for this home-recorded voices project, if you like. Hear Lorna's talking to a loved one, and we don't actually know too much about her from the recordings, but what I do really like about her is just her accent and her... the way she puts things, she comes across as being very natural.
Hello, darling. I'm speaking to you, just around 1 o'clock on Wednesday, actually. This is going to be my last chance to tape to you. I'm sorry, there's going to be some cable noises. I'm just untwisting it. Actually, the tape recorder is standing on the table in the window in the dining room, and I'm standing over by my desk. So I'm just trying to find a pen... Here goes the Scrabble. Can you hear me? Trying to find a pen to mark something in this brochure of France. I wonder why.
What's interesting about that is that Lorna lets us into the secret. She tells us about the technology she's working with. She doesn't try to edit it. She doesn't try to editorialise it. We get the whole picture of her sitting there, standing there in her room with the cable noise and telling us about that. Any clues as to her background or her, what she did, what circle she moved in?
I can deduce that she was very interested in films, and the reason for that is that a lot of the programmes she recorded were film-based. There's an awful lot related to Ingrid Bergman as an actress, and in fact, Lorna does talk about meeting Ingrid Bergman in great detail, and that was very much a highlight for her.
It's a very awkward moment saying goodbye to anybody, but let alone... someone like Ingrid, But she shook hands for a long time. She said, have you had a good day, or did you enjoy your day? And I said, oh yes, and I'm most grateful to you. Thank you for having me, inviting me or something. And as she was shaking hands, she said, dear Lorna, it's been so good to meet you. And thank you so much for everything. And I thought, well, what on earth have I done? to deserve that, but anyway, I'm very pleased to have her say it, and I felt a bit of a clot in front of all these other people looking, and she said, when I make a film over here again, you must come and see me. I hope to meet you again.
The mysterious Lorna Butler, one of the many audio letters in Richard Harrison's collection of home recordings. And the majority of home recordings which listeners sent in for this programme were audio letters too.
Dear Auntie Sue, we'll be thinking of you when you are in Australia, and we are going to make a book of Australia, and all the postcards you have sent us, we will put in our book. Love, Lloyd.
Dear Sue, I hope you settle down nicely when you get to Australia. We'll all be thinking of you. And if ever you need any help, you know who to contact. We all love you very much and we'll all miss you, but we know you'll enjoy yourself and it won't be long before we'll be seeing you again. Lots of love, Stu.
Dear Sue, hope you have a super time in Australia, and when you see all those gorgeous fellas on the beach, just think of me back home in England. Don't forget to send us lots of letters, and don't forget to send the cassette back, because we can always play it. Lee said look at all the animals for him, all the jumping kangaroos, and he wants pictures of them.
And then we went to the cafe by the Serpentine. But when we got there, we ordered our food, and Ted got some pasta. Then he went with something inside to get some drinks. So when we came out, I was left alone. And these piglins came, and I was so overcome with laughing, and it was so funny, that I didn't stop them. And they ate all of my father's pasta. They ate it all up, every little bit. And when he came out, he was very annoyed. They were sitting in it. They were actually sitting in it, dropping their poo on the plate and eating the pasta.
Some audio letters throw up curious echoes from the past. Here's a recording sent from Australia in the early 1960s.
Well, things here in the last couple of months have gone very, very dead. Business in general. There's a credit squeeze on, means to say that the banks are not lending any, and they've called in the money that they've got out with the finance companies, and the finance companies are not doing any finance, and consequently, I can't sell bikes on terms, as from last Friday. I was cut off. Others have been cut off a while before me. But how we get over it, I don't know. It looks as though it's on for about, well, some people say 3 months, some say six. But it'll be a battle to get over it. If we can, we'll be pretty good, because I'll be the only one in Fremantle that will be selling motorbikes. So by hook or by crook, I've got to keep going somehow. Anyway, it'll sort itself out.
It was Friday afternoon, about 4 o'clock. March the 9th, actually, the date is. Just made a cup of tea. I suppose you've probably heard over there that we're very short of fuel over here, oil of course, and it's affecting the petrol situation. We can't buy petrol from 7 o'clock on Friday evenings until 6 o'clock on Monday morning. That's the first restriction. They are thinking of bringing in carless days, where you choose your own day to go without the car. I can't really see what good that's going to do, because people only use the car a bit more on the other days.
Father, I have no idea what I'm going to say in this tape. I have no notes whatever, and not even a plan in my head of how it's going to go, so it will probably be a horrible effort. Maybe you'll never hear it. If it's too bad, I'll scrap it and return to the written word. I've kind of put off writing to you, and now I have two letters to answer, neither of which I have with me. They are safely tucked away upstairs, and I'm too lazy to go up and get them.
So lots of letters, lots of audio correspondence. But back with Richard Harrison. Richard, what other areas have you identified?
Well, one of the other key areas is the sort of travelogue where people would take their machine. And these are actually heavy machines. OK, there were some portable models, but they were still fairly weighty and valuable as well. But people would take them abroad and make recordings on location.
Country, Saudi Arabia. Place, Al-Quba, near Dhahran. It is Christmas Eve at 5 o'clock in the morning, December 24th, 1973. This is the voice of the mullah calling the faithful to prayer from the minarets of the mosque behind the floor flats in Al-Quba.
What have we got here? A box full of tiny tapes, all numbered.
Yes. This is a collection which we've called the General's Collection, and they were owned by a general, but we don't know any more details. Again, it's very, very intriguing. But what we do know is that he was one of the people that took his machine and his tapes abroad, and he seems to have travelled fairly extensively in Europe and recorded a number of things there between 1961 and 65. they're all numbered and they're all referenced then in a book. And of course, one of the problems with reels is sometimes that they are numbered and the listing that would have been in the book, somebody dies, the house is cleared, and the book disappears. Mm. And all you have then is there's a lot of reels numbered 1 to 100, and you've got no idea what's on each one. You have to then check and go through.
So what have we got here?
Reel 36, labelled up Continent 1965. On the other side of the reel, Round the Horn from 1968. But look at Continent 1965, and we have a tiny piece of paper here which has been glued to the spool of the reel itself, which tells you exactly what recordings are on this particular reel. Meningate Last Post, Bird Songs, Bruges, all sorts.
OK, so could we have a listen?
This is the Meningate at Keeper. In a few moments, police will stop all traffic and two buglers will come out and sound the last post.
An iconic moment there, something that anyone who's been to Ypres will know that happens every day. But we're actually preserving a performance there, a performance that actually has got its flaws in it because it's a live performance and so forth. So it's here was somebody who really was conscious of using radio techniques, if you like, as a sort of travelogue.
Indeed. What he's capturing here are moments in time of his journey around Europe. And that's a sort of the ultimate souvenir, really. Maybe the technology would have been available to do cine recordings, but they would have been silent. But the idea of actually having audio recordings makes it that much better than plain photographs. And a great image of the general hawking this machine around, recording people and sounds.
Some recorded impressions taken on a trip to the continent in the summer of 1962. First in the waiting room at Southend Airport.
This is the main waiting room and offices, a big hall there.
Next, having flown over from Southend to Calais, the next stop was at Bertangle, a camp just north of Amiens. There were not many other campers here, but there were some children playing about, and this short record of their running about and laughter is rather typical, I think.
We have a really clear travelogue audio documentary here.
Yeah, two things really interest me is firstly how evocative it all is, and the other thing I really like is when he goes to record the children, that they actually want to be recorded.
Now here are some more children, this time at the camp at Orléans. They soon spotted me and then all came crowded round the table, all wanting to get their voices recorded, as you will hear.
Can you record my voice?
It's very sensitive. It'll take all your voices if you want.
So what is the motive, what is the experience behind chronicling one's life in terms of sound? I've come to Ormskirk near Liverpool to meet Tony Krimlisk, who's been doing this for 50 years. Tony, what was your impetus? What made you start recording and why?
Well, I think there was two reasons. One was that I was into technology. I'd been in the RAF and done national service and been a radar mechanic, so I'd been working with tape recorders. And then for my 21st birthday, I was given a tape recorder, a second-hand tape recorder, Grundig TK-819. And that was the year I went to college for the first time. So it seemed a wonderful opportunity to record some of my fellow students singing and talking and communicate also with friends and relations and parents through the tape.
And it was a time when that idea, the idea of being able to play back instantly an experience, was new and very novel for people.
Oh, it was very exciting, absolutely.
Let's listen to a few examples of the recordings you've made of your life. And here's one recording from 1960, and it really does give us a bit of a sense of place because it's an audio tour of what was then your bachelor pad.
That's right. I spent the first year of my first job in Diggs not very happy. And then the second year, I shared a flat with a friend who was at college with me. And this recording was made the very first day. He'd only just arrived. I was frying him a meal for the evening, frying eggs and bacon and what have you, and then looking around the flat and again sharing it with my parents and with his parents what our new flat was like.
Hello, Peter. How do you like your bacon, brown or black?
Very gray.
Very gray, all right, let's see what I can do. Well, as you might imagine, I'll just take off time for a second. While these tomatoes are frying, this is our first meal in the new flat. Peter has just arrived, and we're having some sausages, which are already cooked, and baked. Bake what?
Bread.
Got the bread. Chair.
Oh.
Yes, and we're having some bacon and some tomatoes and a couple of eggs. Well, actually, I don't know quite what will happen with the eggs because I broke them coming. Now, here comes Peter now. Yes, hello. Have you got the table ready?
Right,
come on.
Have you a bread knife?
No, I don't
think you have. Tony Krumlis, this next recording of yours we're going to listen to is actually an audio letter, effectively, but it's from 1962, and it's the announcement of your engagement.
I was living in Gillingham in Kent. My parents were in Scarborough in Yorkshire, and they had a tape recorder as well, so we swapped tape letters. This was about February 1962. I sent this tape letter of our engagement.
Well, hello. There's quite a lot of news to tell you, so we thought we'd send you a tape letter by way of change. I haven't had one from you yet, so I thought we'd send you one. It's Sunday evening. It's about 20 past seven, half past seven. It was 7:10 when we started. When we started recording, as a matter of fact. We've had a couple of goes. I got an awful noise on the first time. Well, the first important thing that I want to tell you is that Jill and I are now engaged, officially. It happened yesterday. We bought the ring and everything. So that's that. No dates fixed for a possible wedding. As you know, it's, from your point of view, it's likely to be difficult in the summer. It may be difficult at Christmas, Rita's...
Your mind's wandering, come on.
I don't know why you say that. It may be difficult at Christmas from Jill's parents' point of view. Anyway, it may be Christmas or it may be Easter, we'll see.
I'm just trying to think of the person at the other end hearing that, which is actually a different experience to thumbing through a letter and saying, hey, listen to this. Suddenly you're hearing this news communicated like that.
Yes, I think it is a different experience. I think it's a more personal one, a more powerful one than just reading a letter, particularly my handwriting is so bad.
Sitting in your home, surrounded by family photographs and now drawings from some of the grandchildren, all part, if you like, of the fabric that we all have in our lives, do you see that the recordings that you've done over the years are actually a part of that same process of gathering that material?
Absolutely, yes. I think I've always been very aware that time passes very easily, very quickly, and things that you think are permanent today are gone so quickly, and it's nice to capture these moments, and it's particularly nice to sit back 50 years later and look at them or listen to them.
I mean, is that what it is, effectively, a sound recording, a picture? Does it have the same emotional impact?
Absolutely, yes.
It's that moment.
Oh, yes, yes. It brings back the moment, it brings back the emotions, it brings back the feelings of that period.
Yeah. Probably one of the most personal recordings in your collection, actually, the birth of your daughter. Can you tell me about
that? Yes, again, perhaps I had to have a very indulgent wife to allow me to do this, but she did agree, and I put the tape recorder in the bedroom. And this was the 8th of November 1963. We hear the doctor's steps going up the staircase.
Hello.
And the actual birth, a very emotional experience at the time, and a very emotional one to listen to again now.
What's the response of your daughter listening to that recording now?
Well, she first said it would have been as a small child, I suppose. But now I think it's still a very emotional experience, and the grandchildren have heard it as well. And I think both my daughters are very happy to listen to themselves again. They enjoy playing those tapes to their children.
Phone for the doctor, come quick, quick, quick. The doctor came with his hat and his bag, and he knocked on the door with a...
Can you detect any kind of predestiny in some of the recordings you made of your children, well, and what they subsequently did?
There's a nice recording of them singing about Miss Polly going to the doctors. And in fact, they both ended up as doctors.
He wrote on his paper for a bill. I'll be back in the morning with my pill.
Joshua at 4 months. 7 months. Joshua at 11 months. 16 months. Daddy.
One of the attractions for home recordists. It's been the capture in sound of their own children. Their innocence, their play, their stories. The preservation, in other words, of that fleeting thing called childhood.
The party play group. And then, after shopping.
Why did the dinner lady go bonkers? Of course, she had a bonk on my head by one of the just...
If at first you don't succeed, never, never, never give up. Never, never, never give up, even though you're feeling rough.
Have you been to my house one day?
I think I've been to your house, yes. I think I'm your mummy.
I don't think so, because I'm Harriet. Or Miranda.
Oh, well, I'm Katie Chambers' mummy.
What's Casey James's mummy called?
Called Sandra.
And what's Casey James's daddy called?
It's called Martin.
Do you both go to the pub?
Sometimes we do, yes. I like going to the pub.
Bar, bar, poo. Poor old lassies, have you any more? Yes, sir, yes, I'm very happy. One more, one more, one more, one more, one more, one more, one
more. I am a little soldier.
A little guy.
I am only 3 years old.
Let me hear you.
I am made to fight for Jesus.
And he made by Jesus.
And wear a crown of gold.
Crown of gold.
A crown of gold. And wear a crown of gold.
Wear a crown of gold.
That's right, though.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Grandma. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Grandma. Here we are again with another birthday special. First, we will sing
sing a song from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which we sang with the choir last year.
I close my eyes, draw back the curtain, to see for certain what I thought I knew. Far, far away, someone was weeping, but the world was sleeping. Any dream will do.
Ask yourself a question. Answer it true.
Even a 20-year-old duetting with himself on a song he hoped might make him a star 4 decades ago.
Look to the future, look in a crystal ball.
And I still think I could have had a hit with that one.
If you know, is the future there at all?
One of the most important reasons for making home recordings was, and always will be, the preservation of family stories, memories, and history. Before it's too late.
Went and got him this bowl of chicken soup. He was sitting on a commode and he had that and he went pum, 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 and he turned blue. And his hand I've got hold of and his arm went absolutely stone cold. That frightened me at glory. I said, oh, whatever's happened? I said, he's gone cold. So we went, who went round after Mr. McDougall? And he said, have you tried his pulse? No, I thought. And he said, he's gone.
Oh, and we went to the Old Village School at Sherburn St. John,
nice.
Basingstoke, where we all went to school. My brother Will took us. And we were looking in the playground.
Yeah.
And the schoolmaster came out to us.
Yeah.
He said, could he show us round? And we said, we all went to school here. And, he was most interested. He said, we said we would like to go and see the church again, you see. It's only across the road. And he said, while you're gone, I'll find the registers. And when we came back into the school again, he said, you'd be surprised. There was Rose and May and Eliza, George, Hester, Beatrice, Florence, Amy,
mm-hmm.
Edith, Charles and Winifred.
Brother Bill.
All in this register. Couldn't believe it. And it made our day, didn't it?
As a result of requesting material from the public for this programme, some extraordinary and often very moving recordings came to light. Mark Allinson contacted us with a tape made by his grandfather in 1986. Ted Brown's recording is a difficult listen, but then it's not easy to learn to speak again after you've had your vocal cords removed.
When I am mastered the art of belching, I started on the ultimate B, B, C, etc. The fresh brand for each letter, then 2 letters per breath, B, B, then A, B, C, and so on. In between counting 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. I then progressed onto nursery rhymes. But believe me, it was not easy.
Hello, this is Phil Ted Brown, but with a different voice. I am Abdul Ahmed. Further surgery. I have to learn to talk again. With the help of
The human, the indomitable, coming to us through the machine, given through the kindness of strangers.
Okay, now.
Yes.
This record player is recording.
Yes.
Today is Wednesday, the 19th of September.
Yes.
And you and I are having a conversation.
Yes.
So, what have you got to say for yourself, Mummy?
Well, that I am very pleased to have you here. I'm really enjoying thoroughly. It's a great, great relief for me.
Tell me about the things you used to do at the bank.
Oh, I was a very good clerk. I used to work for the managers. Well, I was very happy in the bank. I've been there nearly 16 years. I was well respected. I had a nice holiday through the manager who sent us four girls together to have a nice holiday of 3 months in Italy.
3 months? I didn't realize you were there for 3 months.
It was so cold. You used to have to wash in the bedroom with cold water.
What, was there a sink?
No, you had a basin and jug. What are you talking about? You didn't have sinks in them days. You had a bucket for other purposes.
Oh.
And the loo there, that was quite posh because that was a chain one. You know, but you had to go outside to get to it. And I remember once when it was going to be a pancake day, you had to cook it on this oil stove in what was the wash house. And then come outside and back into the house, you see. And that was so cold. You know you put fat in the pan to melt and pour. The fat had set before the pancake got in.
Oh, that's disgusting.
No, it wasn't.
I'm here with Richard Harrison and his amazing collection of audio tapes at Galston near Great Yarmouth. As you go through, Richard, do you identify various themes in what people recorded?
Yes, that's so. Some people did sort of letters. Sometimes there are just a kind of conversation maybe between two people. And sometimes people tended to go more towards the dramatic and to do something a little bit out of the ordinary. And there's an example actually here of one of those. Nothing about this recording is known. We don't know who they are, when it was recorded, where it was recorded. All we have is the recording itself.
Hello, this is your reporter, reporting from 31 St James Avenue West, where it's all happening today. There is literally thousands of people standing out here, waiting for the people to see this wonderful happening. And it looks like it's going to happen any moment now. There's spaceships rocketing overhead, and things falling from out of the sky. And yes, it looks like the Martians have definitely landed, and I can see little green men climbing up on my apple tree at the bottom of the garden. Wait just a moment, one of them is waving a flag. Yes, yes, it's the Union Jack. Now where on earth did they get a Union Jack from on Mars? Oh, I see, they've brought their mother with them. She belongs to the local sewing circle. Oh yes, they've definitely come to see this brand new tape recorder we have just repaired, and I'm pretty sure that is, that they really know that this is where it's all happening. So I will leave you now and return you to the studio to your hostess, Diane Smith. Over and out.
This is one of the problems with home recording, as we heard there, is that often other members of the family want to join in and sometimes take over.
Exactly. A professional recording, you isolate exactly what you want in and what you don't want. With the domestic recording, you've got all the possibilities of people, and you get some of these great recordings where people are actually telling people to be quiet.
That really was an example of somebody playing at radio, really, wasn't it? Playing at being the radio commentator.
Yeah, very true. Yes.
Now, I'm on tape recorder, I'm on transmissions, and the transmission area up on the roof, and it's
Hello, welcome to the Mr. Blobby Station. This is Stephanie Gosling and
Michelle Farley
speaking. We're now going to put on Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. It became number one when it first came out for 14 weeks. Then when Freddie died, it became number one again. Take it away, Freddie.
You know what you saw early on?
Yes.
In the bathtub?
Yes.
Well, will you ignore it, please?
Yes, certainly. I will. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, no, I've just got to tell someone. And, well, I've just got to go back and... But I will come back someday and do something good to make Ellie admire me, or whatever her name was.
But maybe, just maybe, that something could have something to do with the torch. Join us next week in our next installment of Holding a Torch for You.
Holding a Torch for You was produced by Betty Bluebum and was directed by Charles McDougall.
Now for some commercials. After the commercial break. Now.
Hi. From the Max Factor Studios and laboratories in America, we present to you the skincare range. Max Factor's new skincare range has been dermatologically prepared, hypoallergenic, and just perfect for the sensitive skin of today. With our new low prices, you can enjoy the skincare range all year long.
Nines and Road Radio. Ding ding. Hello, this is Squeaky Sally. I know you've all been waiting to hear me. I am the presenter of 49 Sin Road Radio. I know, I love the jingle. 49 Sin Road Radio. 49 Sin Road Radio. It's so cool. Anyway, as I was saying, let's get down to the whole point of the news today.
This has been recorded live.
Yes.
That doesn't even make sense. On the 8th of July, 1994, at 5 to 5 in the evening.
2 years away from...
The first Talk the Pops I've ever did. And I can promise you a lot of good music.
I've come to the home of Russell Barnes in Blandford in Dorset. And Russell's been a collector and an archivist of early recordings for many years. Russ, I think we can prove unequivocally that this kind of idea of recording domestic scenes in the home predates by far the 1950s and 60s.
Oh, yes. When Edison first recorded his voice, that was on a tinfoil machine. We get into the 1900s, and they then thought of recording onto wax.
We have here a collection of cylinders recorded by a company called S.A. Smith of Handel House, Fisherton, Salisbury. Tell us about these. How did you come across them, first of all?
Well, we have a free paper in North Dorset, and I noticed that someone was selling a pushchair, a table and chairs, and a box of records. So I made an appointment to go and see them. Went through the records, and they weren't particularly interesting. And then he said, well, I don't suppose you're interested in cylinders. He was going to throw them on the tip. And I said, well, yes, I would. And then I noticed from the boxes that they were clearly personal recordings. So he gave them to me, got them home and realised what they were. Now, the difficulty was this. They're wax, they're soft, and you can destroy them in one playing. So I played them once and realised they were gems. So I've been waiting for years for someone to invent a gadget to play these. And lo and behold, a Frenchman called Henri Chaumeau has produced a modern machine to play cylinders. And Dominic Coombe, a researcher and collector, he invited me to his house. We took the cylinders up and we played them. And it's remarkable.
This is February the 24th, 1917. I am Uncle George. I have come down from London. The war with Germany is now on.
Bang 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 b
they seem to be having fun. I mean, they seem to be really uninhibited, which is interesting because this is audio. Mm-hmm. If we look at a photograph of that same family of the time, it would probably look very formal and posed and forth. But there's a sense in which perhaps the very fact that it's audio that makes them relax and enjoy themselves more.
They were relaxed, and I think they were in a familiar atmosphere. They came from far and wide. They're a big family, extended family. And they would visit the Smiths, clearly, in Fisherton. And they would stand around, and I suppose Sam Smith, the owner of the shop, he would control things and orchestrate it. And it all works very well. There must be at least 10 voices on these cylinders, which people doing family research would be over the moon to think they could hear the relations.
I am Rami. I'm 9 years old today. This is my birthday. I've had a nice bicycle, and I've been out for a nice ride today.
Sing a song of sixpence, a bottle full of rye, 4 and 20 letters baked in a pie. When the pie was open, the bird began to sing. Was a better pretty thing to sing before the king, sung by Uncle Tom.
But amazing as it is, this 1917 recording is not the oldest known UK domestic recording. In the National Sound Archive, there's a recording made in 1898.
February 15, 1898. A few friends gathered together at 44 Benson Road, which Cincinnati and his friend got speed on their leaving for New Guinea at the Soyuz train. They wished them a successful visit and a safe return good health.
And the very earliest was recorded by one Thomas Hough in 1894.
I would advise you, my children, to stick together, to cling to your loving father, be a comfort to him, and may God bless you all, is the prayer of your affectionate grandfather, Thomas Hough. It was made on January 26, 1894. Witness, John J. Leonard and Alice Hough.
I, John James Leonard, testify to the foregoing. Alice Hough, also.
Thousands of years ago. And today's 21st century home recordists, like student Rory Ouskery, have a new tool at their disposal, the internet, and a worldwide audience waiting to download their latest domestic recordings. These days, everyone can be their own radio station.
Thank you very much indeed, VoiceOver Man. Well, welcome along to the Rory Ouskery Show podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since we did the last one, but that's normal because I don't do it every week.
I'd like to do podcasts and things in the house with my flash mic, just get my mates round and set the thing up, couple of pairs of headphones, and just basically sit and talk about things that have happened over the previous weeks before that.
One of my best mates at uni, better known as Barry. Barry, how are you doing?
Doing great, mate. Good afternoon.
Good. We've got loads of stuff we're going to talk about on the podcast today, and I'm going to get the bit of paper, which I've written down, a few notes.
No names, though.
No names. Well, actually, we are going to name and shame somebody on today's podcast. My flatmates, which you know well as well, Phil, yeah. Andy, Kate and Joe, sort of the next stage then is to upload the file onto a website, which basically hosts the file as an MP3. Unbelievably, the podcast is downloaded between 60 and 100 times, which I think is ridiculous, given the fact that it's basically just me and some mates just talking a lot of rubbish a lot of the time. To keep you entertained, all coming up on the Rory Ouskery Show podcast. Here's a jingle for it as well.
The Rory Ouskery Show, now enjoyed everywhere.
Anyway,
how to get that in there?
Yeah, right? I've got loads of jingles. I've got them all done up before the last podcast. I'm quite proud of them, actually.
Yeah, they sound quite good, man.
I'm here with Richard Harrison and his collection of audio tapes. It's very difficult from our perspective now, looking back 50 or even 40 or 30 years. The technology, in many cases, was new. I mean, people were actually playing around with a new technology, weren't they?
Oh, yes, definitely. And there's the fascination in hearing your own voice back, which is something a bit like the pioneers of film. It was the interest in seeing your image and here it's hearing your voice and familiarity of voices, friends, family. But, yeah, people played around with it. People had fun with the speeds. People had fun with the stereo. the two channels, and that again is great. There are some really, really amusing recordings you can get from people being pioneers in sound.
Have you got an example of someone playing around with technology in that way?
Yes. I mean, there was a whole archive I bought that they were specifically designed to be recorded on as audio letters. The reels are 3-inch, so they're very, very small, but they came in their own specifically designed boxes. And this particular archive, I've dubbed the Friedrichs Elias Archive, because it was sent from one family in America to their friends in Belgium. And they recorded using this sort of stereo experimentation. The American had the tape from Belgium, so it went from Belgium to America with the recording on it on 2 of the 4 tracks that were possible, and he then took that, recorded on 1 of the remaining 2 spare tracks, and sent the tape back. So the result is he's able to talk to and hold a conversation with the people from Belgium recorded on the same tape, which is something that is not possible with something like an audio cassette. From a modern perspective, there's something quite charming in it, I think.
Good evening, Marion and Henry.
Good evening, Jackie.
It's now 5 to 10 in the evening.
Well, it's Monday, only 2 o'clock here.
The 14th, isn't it?
The 14th, yes.
Yes, we're a little bit later than we thought we were going to be.
Well, you shouldn't stay up so late nights.
But here we are. We want to get this off
You're
tomorrow.
You're sniffling like I do, Jackie.
Yes, that's funny. It's been a long time, your tapes, Henry.
Yes, we thank you for your tape.
Well, that's not our fault, because we mailed it last Thursday, a week ago yesterday.
She does speak well, doesn't she?
She speaks very well.
We waited all over the weekend hoping to get the tape to listen to.
Oh, that's a shame.
It would have cheered us up in our
We really tried to get them there on time,
but we never got them. This morning it came and Jill was in bed.
Oh, that's a shame.
And I'm sure it was only those tapes that finally dragged you out.
Yes, I know.
I told you there was some. We've been, as you've heard, Claire coughing, Christopher coughing, now Julie's coughing.
I haven't heard you cough, Jackie.
And one thing and another, we've been sick. We had tummy troubles.
Absolutely fantastic.
That's strange.
Because of the technology, because of the experimentation with the technology, there are probably things in here that seem quite mysterious, almost ghosts in the machine, things that are hidden within the sounds.
Yeah, and that's partially due to the capacity of the reels, and also this thing about the tracks, where you could move between the tracks and things, as you say, vanish and then reappear again. And I think there's a sort of fascination in that. Nothing is as straightforward as it seems.
You've got a recording of a man talking to himself in stereo.
Yeah, impossible to be done via cassette, but with reel, seemingly all things are possible, and it certainly is here.
Yes, I'm on the left. Where are you? Where am I? Well, of course, I'm on the right-hand side. Oh, is that you, Eric, on the left-hand side? Yes, I'm on the left. Where are you? Well, of course, I've told you, I'm on the right now. Oh, you are you? Yes, I am.
Because this time of year, Christmas, was the time when these tapes would have been sent, and we've got a tape here which actually was recorded specifically for this time of year.
Yeah, it's part of this correspondence, the Friedrichs Elias correspondence, and it's from Friedrichs in Pennsylvania, and it's addressed to Jules Elias in Brussels, Belgium, airmail special delivery, and it cost Mr. Friedrichs $1.05 to send. And on the front of the box, it has a customs label which says, personal tape recording, value none.
Although, probably from a social history point of view, its value is priceless.
Indeed.
Well, we have our Christmas tree up, for one thing.
Yeah, our Christmas tree's up.
This year, for the first time, and we've often talked about having one, but we never did get it. It is an artificial one.
This tree revolves, Jules, all lit up, and plays the following tune.
Oh, we have to put the light on over there. Isn't that pretty, Jackie?
Now the tree's all lit up and it's revolving. Turns around.
Well, thank you, Richard, very much indeed for sharing your collection with us. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And thanks to Tony Crimnis, too, for his personal insights into his past, and to everyone who shared their recordings with us for this programme.
And here's wishing you all a very happy Christmas for 1966 and the years to come.
And in that sack he had some dolls. Oh, what a lot.
I just sent it up the chimney, this secret, and I don't want to talk on here because then you'll know what I put up the chimney.
Well, if I brought their flock by night, oh, the little thunder.
Happy Christmas to you.
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hope you enjoy turkey.
I've just been talking for about 5 minutes and the tape emptied, so I've had to roll it back a little bit. 29th, and it's snowing outside. It's very, very cold and very, very icy, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
This week's edition of the Archive Hour, Home Recorded Voices, was presented by Sean Street and produced by Andy Cartwright as a soundscape production for BBC Radio 4. Where after the news, our classic serial is set in the 18th century and tells the story of Alexander Ashbrook, a young aristocratic chorister who's facing a life without music, a prospect he finds unbearable. Chorum Boy in a couple of minutes.